If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of the following promo special, help support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/podcastersassemble. Link in the show notes.
If you're a fan of this podcast
and want to see it continue,
help support us on Patreon,
where you can unlock tons of exclusive content,
including, but not limited to,
movie commentaries,
ad-free versions of our promo specials,
extended cuts,
early access to new episodes,
behind-the-scenes clips,
first access to merchandise,
blooper reels,
and even a chance to vote on what we cover next on our Podcasters Disassembled episodes.
Just head right on over to patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
That's patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
Link in the show notes.
When toxic culture has you down,
when you're just looking to laugh and have fun,
kick back and enjoy watching a video game,
or just make some new friends,
it's time to visit the Geek to Geek Media Network,
a community of podcasters, streamers, and bloggers.
Well, more of a family than a community.
All dedicated to geeking out about the things we love. Things like
video games,
Star Wars,
comics,
movies,
K-pop,
Disney Plus,
Keanu Reeves,
new,
or whatever our community decides is the next best thing.
That's right. We have a great online community on Slack and Discord where we chat about our weekly geekery with listeners and viewers.
And each other.
Yep, and each other in real time. And we can't wait for you to join us.
So come check us out at geek2geekmedia.com.
And escape toxic fandom for something much more...
Keanu?
Yes, Keanu.
Are you troubled by strange voices in your ears?
Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement, attic, or car?
Have you or your family actually listened to a spooky podcast?
If the answer is yes, don't wait another minute. Just pick up the phone and listen to the professionals.
Ghostcasters! Our courteous and efficient submitters are on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural podcast listening needs as we count down to the latest release of the Ghostbuster series, Ghostbusters Afterlife 2021.
We're ready to believe you.
I was reading about Shandor, you know, the guy who donated most of the Gozer stuff. He was into the occult, you know, supernatural. Weird dude.
Why don't we talk about it some other time? Any other time.
Hey, you can't be in here. Stop!
I'm Stephen White, co-host of Super Mega Crash Brothers Turbo and Cinema Salsa.
Hey everyone, it's Rob here from And Sometimes Rob, as well as Ecto-MX5, the North Star Ghostbusters, and Customers for a Cause here in Minnesota.
Hi, this is Zach from Neatcast, FN Cultured, and Podcasters Assembled.
Hello, my name is Douglas Gale. I am co-host of a podcast called Game Pass, where we're playing through the Game Pass catalog in alphabetical order.
Hi, my name's Bill from Bill's JRPG Adventures and Other Trappings podcast.
Hi, this is Justin Aki, graphic designer and one half Significant Other Co.
Hello, crew. This is the Questing Truck from the Questing on the Road podcast.
This is Eric Slater from Epic Fails of History, Too Young for This Trek, and Comic Zombie.
And I'm talking about the video game, 2009 Ghostbusters video game, aptly titled Ghostbusters, the video game.
Today we're specifically talking about the 2009 Ghostbusters, the video game.
Ghostbusters, the video game.
And today we are going to do the Ghostbusters, the video game review.
I am here to talk today about Ghostbusters, the video game.
The fantabulous game called
Ghostbusters!
The Ghostbusters video game exists.
Today, it's the 2009 Ghostbusters the video game.
The unofficial official Ghostbusters 3, with a script written by Dan Aykroyd and possibly by Ivan Reitman. Did he help with this? Or Harold Ramis?
Which was actually re-released back in 2019.
For the PS4, Steam, and Nintendo Switch. Originally released on the Xbox 360 and PS3.
Specifically, this is the realistic, quote-unquote realistic version, as opposed to the abstract version that was available on, I guess, Wii and maybe 3DS. The realistic version is the one that was on Xbox and, I assume, PC and other consoles.
Now, there's been several video games, but this particular one is the 2009 version. And to be honest, this game is actually why I wanted to take part in this season of Podcasters Assembled.
It has more 3D-ish looking models versus cartoony models for those.
Not to be confused with the vastly inferior 2016 game, or the arguably far superior 80s game for the NES and Atari 2600.
Oh yeah! Spectrum, baby!
I do want to mention some of the other video games that we've, you know, from the past, because I played a lot of those as a kid, especially. The original Ghostbusters, I initially saw the first one in Commodore 64. I played it on the Atari 2600, and my memory of it is the Commodore 64 version of it was superior, like graphically and just more options and everything else. But I played the heck out of the original Ghostbusters on the Atari as well. I really enjoyed it. It's very simple. You know, you go around and you go to the different houses that have flashing red and they have ghosts, and you have to like line your guys up and, you know, shoot the ghost, and then you get your trap going.
I also remember playing the Ghostbusters 2 NES game.
The other game that I remember playing was Ghostbusters 2, which of course came after that movie.
Which I remember also being difficult, but being more of a letdown that I was a Ghostbuster. You could play two people, but you didn't have a proton pack. You had the slime pack from Ghostbusters 2, and the game made about as much sense as the Ghostbusters 2 movie. Lots of inanimate objects just kind of bouncing at you. You did get to drive Ecto-1, which is neat, but you ended up like jumping over spike traps on the ground. And then at one point you do operate the Statue of Liberty and shoot fire from the torch at ghosty goos in like an Atari style invaders kind of game. It was a weird fever dream.
And honestly, my only memory of that was like being in Ecto-1 and like somehow jumping over holes in the road, and I don't remember liking that game at all. I think there have been several other ones, but those are the only two other ones that I really remember. So then we can come to this one.
I first rented it back on the 360 when I was working at Blockbuster, and I bought it a couple years back on the PS4, but just never quite finished it for whatever reason. But hey, now I have an excuse. Hashtag podcast reasons.
This game is great.
God knows when this game was released. God knows why I had it. It was terrible.
This game is a very, very good game.
Oh my god, you cannot believe how bad this game was.
It's probably one of the best adaptations of an existing IP into a video game that I can remember playing.
When this game first released, I was pretty excited because this looked to be the Ghostbusters game I'd always dreamed of.
It's very immersive. If you watch the Ghostbusters movie and you're like, you know what? I'd really like to be a Ghostbuster. This game lets you be a Ghostbuster.
The game is also really creepy at times, even by Ghostbuster standards.
And while I was mostly satisfied with my initial playthrough, I will say I was a little disappointed that I had to settle for a downgraded, cartoonish-looking version of the game to play on my Wii. PS3 and Xbox 360 versions looked amazing by comparison.
Graphics-wise, my copy of the game was awesome. I have a Beastmaster PC, it played great, the characters were slightly tweaked to be a little more cartoony, it was almost like a Telltale game.
I think it was a couple years ago. It was the only time I've ever played through it. I've only done it once, but I have not had the chance to dig into the remastered version.
This game is sort of like if someone came up to you and said, hey, do you like Ghostbusters? Did you like the Star Wars CGI cartoons? Because there's actually a very short 7-episode Ghostbusters CGI series. That's kind of what this game is, where it's like 7 little missions with lots of cutscenes with the original actors. And it's also an interactive cartoon in that sense.
I feel like there was another time that I probably started watching all of the cutscenes as one long movie, and that might have been what led me to actually get the game.
Now, when I got this game for free from Epic, I always wanted to play it. I just didn't find time. Leading up to this episode of Podcasters Assemble, I was able to start. I played about a third of the game.
Honestly, I was able to play for about 2 full levels before a crash.
I played what I could, and then I did watch the rest of the plot through streaming online.
So after playing a few levels and getting the hang of the controls, I just ended up watching a YouTube of all the dialogue with the characters and the cutscenes.
I was struggling a little bit at first with some of the clunkier controls and a few glitches that I came across, but after taking a break and getting back into it, I really started to love this game.
Now, regarding the story in this game, it was apparently adapted from an unused draft for the third movie.
The plot, I don't know that it's necessarily underappreciated as much as it's probably unknown. This game's plot is, in a lot of ways, and I'll discuss it a little bit here and further, but is a lot of ways Ghostbusters 3.
One of the coolest things about this game, though, is that it was actually based on the unused script for Ghostbusters 3 that was written in the 90s.
Aykroyd and Ramis have been working on a third film originally titled Ghostbusters 3 Hellbent.
All of the 4 primary Ghostbusters from the first 2 movies are here with their original actors as the voices, which is fantastic. The writing, I believe, is Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd. So if you like the writing in the Ghostbusters movie, you'll almost certainly enjoy the writing in this.
This was apparently based on a script that was written.
While it is a game, it's kind of a really well-made combination of game and movie. A very long movie when you really get down to it, but it's a good one.
But I'm glad it never made it to the big screen.
The concept was that the characters would be transported to an alternate version of Manhattan called Manhelton, and the people there would be, quote, hellish versions of their originals, and that's where they would meet the devil, which part of this whole idea of the third movie was adapted and brought into Ghostbusters the video game. Columbia was interested in the third film, but they were reluctant to move forward because Murray had continued to become less interested in the project. Aykroyd still wanted to move forward, but Ramis was more interested in directing films and actually acting in them. It was bringing up potential actor changes, so the script was designed to introduce new, younger cast to have the starring roles, while the original cast members would return in supporting roles.
Although I would say with a few more adjustments to adapt to gameplay and to include a few throwbacks to the original films, like getting to battle the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
And like a lot of ideas for movies, it kind of stayed in production hell forever and then never actually came to fruition.
It's more video gamey in terms of the logic. It doesn't flow specifically like a movie, but the jokes are almost entirely good jokes, which for a video game is super rare. You usually run into a lot of cringe when developers try to be funny. Like you can almost always tell when developers are writing their own jokes versus that they brought in, you know, say someone who is a professional at writing jokes to punch up their script. So here it's clearly professionals writing the jokes.
Fun facts. Bill Murray, if they were going to film something like this, stated he wanted to be in it for about 10 minutes as a regular human and get killed off and then come back as a ghost that gets to haunt the Ghostbusters. Mostly because he didn't want to play this character anymore.
But that also has the downsides of the stuff with the Ghostbusters franchise. For example, Bill Murray, Peter Venkman continues to be a sex pest in this video game, which makes me very sad.
But for a while, Aykroyd actually considered this game, after it was released, as the third film that he was trying to get produced.
They honestly should have just called it Ghostbusters 3, the video game, but I guess that would have been confusing for some people.
It's a good reminder for me playing this game that I am happy there was no Ghostbusters 3 because I do not like to see Bill Murray being a sex pest on the screen. I don't want to see increasingly older Bill Murray in relationships with, I would assume, increasingly younger women in a Ghostbusters franchise, were it to continue. It's just frustrating us all.
Yo, this is Corey with the World Is My Burrito podcast, aka Twimby, a personal project where I educate my listeners as I dive into various pop culture topics that alter the world around them, yet somehow fell to the wayside. Do you know who almost single-handedly created the manga industry of today? Which major world event changed the horror film industry as a whole? How did comics affect the world's perception of nuclear energy? Journey with me to learn some random stuff.
Do you fondly remember blowing the dust out of a golden Nintendo cartridge to get it to work?
Get the dust out of it.
All right, here we go. Yes, let's get it.
Now the screen's gray.
Aw, man. Or those long nights when you were up late fighting Ganon and you'd hear your mom coming downstairs.
Hello?
That's Mom. Pretend you're asleep.
Wait, pause it. Pause it. Turn off the TV.
Do you think she's
don't
gone?
Make a sound.
I thought I heard two boys down here. Oh, well.
Well, Ben and Pat are here to transport you back to those exhilarating moments as the Hyrule Podcasters! Join the two brothers each week as they play through Zelda games in Nintendo's legendary series. Episodes are filled with color commentary, lightly researched facts, personal anecdotes, and more.
Hyrule Podcasters is available through Anchor on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow the Hyrule Podcasters on Facebook and Instagram at Hyrule Podcasters and on Twitter at Hyrule Podcaster.
The Needcast, your source for offbeat news.
Marauding monkeys bring fear to historic Indian tourist haven. These monkeys have gotten aggressive. Anytime you hold a package in their hand, they'll come up and they'll snatch it from you. Like gang members. Like, take your chain.
Oh my god.
Hot takes on sports?
Drew Brees is a legend. How dare you?
He is, but he's done.
No, he's not. You pardoned him. He's coming back.
He wants to pardon Drew Brees. I want to throw him in prison.
And deep dives into the paranormal.
The Loveland Frogman. At approximately 3:30 a.m., an unnamed businessman, the most credible witness maybe you can find.
Unnamed businessman.
I was just doing business when I saw a frogman.
Join us every Monday, and let's talk some bullshit. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all your favorite podcasting apps.
Too young for this trek. The final frontier. These are the voyages of
MC
Troy
and Eric.
Their mission to introduce Tyler to strange new episodes.
To seek out the best and worst media in the Star Trek franchise.
To boldly go where several podcasts have probably gone before.
You can listen to these goobers talk about Star Trek by searching for Too Young for This Trek or by visiting probablywork.com.
You play through the entire campaign as this unnamed, unspeaking rookie.
The newbie, the greenhorn, the intern.
Generic white dude number two.
Either way, you're the new guy. You have absolutely no voice, but you're there.
Joining is extra help to the Ghostbusters.
It's you don't get to really choose much. You are basically the generic white guy buzz cut figure.
That's actually one of the things that they actually pull off really well in this game is you feel like you're part of the crew. You're part of the gang. A lot of times the silent protagonist really annoys me, but they actually played with that a little bit and had fun with it in this game, which really worked well. You know, it adds to the little bit of the comedy of it. You know, as being a new recruit, basically you're the one that like tests all the new equipment. So, you know, you get all the new gadgets because they don't want to use it themselves because it might kill you. And you get several other weapons as you go. I know you get like the slime gun. There's a strange like X pattern, like plasma bolt.
It seems like there was going to be options where you could choose your character or to customize it, but nope, you can't. You just get this default person and no voice.
You're a new recruit to the Ghostbusters.
But beyond that, you really do feel like you are a Ghostbuster in this game.
And was kind of funny is they never really give you a name. I think it's Egon gets ready to introduce you. Peter Baker, no names. You know, we don't remember what happened last time. We don't want to get attached to the rookie.
You test all the gear, fight alongside the Ghostbusters, anywhere from 1 to 5 of y'all. Though it's mostly you, and sometimes up to 2 more. Sometimes they have another Ghostbuster in a support role, or driving a vehicle, or just being on the radio.
And I was actually okay with the character being some nameless avatar that we get to play as being us.
I'm not sure why they didn't just have you play as Ackward and Murray, with Egon explaining like the updates to the equipment, but I get it, maybe everyone wanted to fight over their favorite character, so like if you felt like you're an Egon person, you'd want to be Egon. And getting talked down to by yourself about like, don't forget to press this button, rookie. I mean, it makes sense. It was unnecessary. And if there was a movie, obviously there wouldn't be another person.
You're not really like this super athletic guy. You know, you're like the other Ghostbusters. You know, they're not really super athletic either. You know, yeah, they can run. They, you know, they do their stuff. They, you know, they carry the pack around and all that. And you're doing that just fine. It's just, you feel like you have weight and you feel like a normal person when you're maneuvering around. And it's, I really like the feel of that in the game.
I mean, it's fun to be the rookie. The rookie actually ends, he goes on to be a character in the comic books because he does leave to start the Chicago franchise. And I don't know if he ever gets a real name.
Although it would have been cooler if they'd have let us design said avatar so we could actually see ourselves as a Ghostbuster.
Like add in just a little bit of character customization so you could change what your character looks like. And you have the thing you want.
The gameplay itself is pretty fun, if not a little dated.
Some of the boss fights are terrible.
Even today, the game feels older, despite how it may look.
Now, the ghosts, inanimate objects, like Ecto-1 or whatever, those look really, really good. Now, some of the animation is a little bit stiff, but overall, I think this is actually, even for 2009, is a really well-made graphically game.
And I played enough games in 2009 to realize it's fine, so I'm not just judging it based on today's play, but it's not awesome.
But you get to play as a Ghostbuster and capture ghosts.
As you can imagine from the movies, you know, you use your proton beam, you weaken the ghost, finally you capture him, or at least in the beam, and then you throw your trap down, and then you got to get him in the trap. And it looks and feels right.
The controls are very reminiscent of Luigi's Mansion on the GameCube. In the best way.
There's no HUD in the video game. You know, there's a whatever, like a aiming, what are those called? Reticles? I don't know. I only read words. I don't hear them. But beyond that, there's no like health bar or other things on screen. That's all in the proton pack on your back that you can see. Because did I mention it's a third person action adventure?
One of the things I think this game did really well, especially with the proton gun, was they definitely made you feel like a Ghostbuster with having to maneuver the ghost around.
Catching ghosts is pretty much like a fishing mechanic. If you had to shoot the fish with lasers for a little bit before they got into the boat. But then after that, you just grab onto the ghost and you kind of reel them in, wheeling them back and forth. And all that is very fun.
The stream would bend in real time, reacting similar to what they showed in the film. So as being the rookie in the Ghostbuster and trying to move a ghost over to the trap, I really like that aspect of it.
You get to destroy things in this game, which is fantastic. That's one aspect of the movie that I find delightful, is just that they're saving people from ghosts, but they're also doing a huge amount of property damage, which you also get to participate in.
And I liked all of the entries. I still feel like I don't have a full grasp of the different sort of grading systems for ghosts, but I know that's in there. The same as I haven't read... You know, I know there's actual, like, a Tobin spirit guide that they created that help you categorize the different kinds of ghosts.
You earn money in the game to buy upgrades to your equipment.
They also track damage you do as money, which is funny.
Very, very good integration of the proton pack into the sort of video game mechanics where they expand it out. You get, like, a slime mode and then kind of like a... It's like a shotgun, but it's a slowdown enemy's shotgun as part of an option of the proton pack.
I do enjoy the different gadgets you get to test out, because you have suddenly become not only the rookie of the team, but their guinea pig.
In a similar vein to how, like in the 2016 movie, they didn't really trap a whole lot of ghosts. They just kind of blew them away. But you know, different ghosts require different methods of disposal.
It introduces different modes for the team's proton pack.
Which, the proton packs now have a variety of different abilities. You have your basic proton stream, which you use to slam and maneuver ghosts around to get them into the traps.
And it's all very funny. Whenever there's a new upgrade, you're in the field and someone in Egon is talking about having the rook, having the noob, having the greenhorn test out the dangerous equipment. That's a fun joke, especially if you've ever worked in an environment like this where you're getting haze. It's a very hazy kind of thing for the new kid.
If I didn't have to use a special weapon, I feel like I just liked being a Ghostbuster.
And capture ghosts!
I like doing the proton stream, leaving burns all over everything, capturing ghosts, but I like slamming them against the ground.
Like gargoyles, you have to lasso and break into the ground. That's a satisfying effect. And there are some great creepy chandelier spider things in the hotel.
You have to stop at the thing, put your trap down on the floor. Your men will stand either side of the trap, and then you got to wait until the ghost is over the middle of the trap. And then you do your beams to capture it in the middle. And you got to release the trap at the right moment to capture the ghost. It's very, very simplistic and very, very difficult to do.
The ghosts are everywhere. Walking down a street, tons of ghosts. Walking through a hotel, tons of ghosts. Most of which you had to capture, so you have to do a whole fighting back and forth, and then you had to throw a trap out and then slam them into the trap. It was pretty satisfying for the first couple times.
There's a lot of really cool scenes. A lot of times, like, half the game you're with the other Ghostbusters. Sometimes you're just paired off with one of the other ones, and they're commenting to you, talking about things going on, or just kind of talking to themselves, especially in Peter Bakeman's case. Like, the other half of the game is, like, you get kind of separated from everybody else, and you're on your own. I think they really did a wonderful job of marrying the gameplay with a story. And like I said, this is Ghostbusters 3. It's written by the actors. They've even said, hey, this was kind of like the abandoned plot for a sequel for Ghostbusters 3.
The other good news is you can't really die as long as there's other Ghostbusters around. If you get enough health hits, you fall down and someone will come get you. If all of you get knocked down, and because the other Ghostbusters will fall down and you have to go help them up, the game restarts to a checkpoint, and sometimes it's a little far.
You have a stasis beam, which can attack and freeze certain ghosts or titans or whatever it may be. And then it can also have a shotgun blast option.
You get all the toys. You get your own proton pack, your own trap, some goggles that let you look up stuff and like tag ghosts.
You have a meson collider, I believe. This was like a super ball blast energy projector, good for bigger enemies, but the small ones could avoid it.
And green slime, which actually neutralizes the black ectoplasm that you come across in the game. It's actually really satisfying just spraying all the goop away. Very reminiscent of Super Mario Sunshine.
But could use it against enemies, but it also had a slime tether function to help you figure out puzzles and get around the map.
It helps the gameplay from getting too monotonous, which can happen from time to time.
The Proton Pack gets a full upgrade, which if you want to go and look up either the Ecto-MX5 fans or the North Star Ghostbusters on Facebook, one of our members, Mike York, has a video game pack that he got commissioned off of, I think it was eBay. But the point is, it has the slime blower attachment, it has the slime tank on it, it has all of the extra lights and wires, and it weighs something like 50 or 60 pounds. It is an absolute beast of a proton pack, and he lugs it with pride. And looks great wearing it. So if you're ever curious, there are fans out there that make those packs.
At times, they would recommend you to use your PKE meter and your paragoggles to help solve problems.
And you know this from your PKE meter a lot of times. But you also have you can scan like ghosts and various objects, and you'll get like this online Tobin spirit guide. Well, actually, it'll tell you like a little brief history of like the different ghosts and so forth. You get a little history. Even like Slimer has his own little history. Which Slimer is like one of the first ghosts you meet. It's kind of like almost like a tutorial level.
And you get all the toys, including Ecto-1 and Marine Ecto-8. You don't get to drive those in the PC. You think you get to do it on the Switch or something.
There's also a choice of four cars, which I've got no idea why that's the case. Like, why would you... Number two was obviously the Hearst from Ghostbusters. Why would you choose anything else?
We also get introduced to the Ecto-8, which is basically a Ghostbusters tugboat.
I love the idea of the roof-mounted giant trap.
Sometimes you get into a little driving minigame where you've got to capture ghosts as you're driving along.
Where you can just drive the Ecto, what would that be at that point? The Ecto-1A, I suppose, from Ghostbusters 2, down the street and just continue to capture ghosts in it. It was a lot of fun.
You've got things like things that will attract ghosts, things that will capture ghosts, things that will detect ghosts, things that will detect marshmallow bombs or something. It didn't really work that one out ever. And you had to put it on your car using a little man and a forklift truck.
I remember like going down the street, like walking beside Ecto-1, and I remember that being really cool. It just, you know, it's because Ecto-1 looks right. It looks to scale. It looks right. You know, and the environmental art in this game is absolutely phenomenal and great. It just looked right to me. That's all I can really say about it. It looked right.
Some of the ghosts you'll be trapping and capturing, other ones you're just obliterating.
So eventually you just have to sort of keep capturing ghosts, take them back to your base, and you get a bit of money for them.
You have the opportunity to upgrade and buy more stuff as the game goes on. That's pretty simple.
You had this weird thing where you're given basically like 10 grand to start your ghost busting business. And the first thing you have to do is go spend it on your car and your bits and your bobs that you got attached to the car.
You get enough points collecting crap and you get to buy new things like a machine gun ghost restrainer. The good news is there is a ton of dialogue in this game.
Furthermore, it was promising the return of the original cast, which sold me on the concept even more.
Some of the dialogue is really cheesy, but most of the voice acting is pretty good. Most of it.
The fact that they were able to secure most of the original cast was impressive.
Some of the important things we should mention on this one is, first of all, it's written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. The entire plot, the entire story. Also, people have actually reprised their roles. Not only just their voices, but actually they've modeled their characters' likeness.
That alone helps elevate this game to another level.
I really like how we were able to get the primary characters back. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Ernie Hudson.
If only Sigourney Weaver had initially signed on, we could have had a proper sequel. In fact, she changed her mind once she actually found out the other cast members had signed on, but they'd already changed the script at that point.
So you have all the original Ghostbusters. You have Peter Venkman, you know, Bill Murray, Grace Dance, Dan Aykroyd. You have Egon Spengler as Harold Ramis. And then you have Ernie Hudson as Winston Zeddemore. You also have Annie Potts reprising her roles as Janine. And can't remember the actor's name, but the guy that plays Walter Peck, he's back.
The voice acting is beyond great. My wife peeked in at one point and thought it was freaky how it really was them, not just voice-alikes phoning them in. It was good. They were their characters.
Bill Murray, still playing his weird, a-hole, creepy Peter Venkman hitting on the girl and just generally being creepy all over. Is this Bill Murray being Bill Murray and phoning it in? Is this Bill Murray being Peter Venkman? I don't know.
So Murray played the entire same lecherous dude hitting on Alyssa, being a dick, and the rest of the Busters do everything with just, I don't know, like a little bit of energy. The actors did a great job, but there's, I don't know, it's kind of phoned in for like the way the Ghostbusters are. It felt like Ghostbusters 2, it really did. Big points to Winston for getting a huge part in the game, both in voice role and amount of crap done. I think one of Bill Murray's conditions for revoicing the role was that everyone gets equal parts, and it shows. There are also some fun jokes when they debate leaving Bill Murray locked up in a coffin because, well, he's a dick sometimes.
Harold Ramis, I felt, went back and forth, and a couple times, well, more than a couple times, he was mailing it in. Sometimes he sounded just like Egon from the original movies, right where he needed to be. Other times he legitimately sounded like he was just reading a script. No inflection, no emotion, seemed very out of place. I'll say that the best voice acting came from Dan and Ernie. They were believable the entire time.
Like I mentioned, most of the in-game dialogue is pretty hilarious, which was a nice surprise. I think it handles the tone way better than both Ghostbusters 2 and 2016.
Hey everyone, Scott here with my good pal Rich. Say hi, Rich.
Hi.
And we're here today to tell you about a podcast we host together with our buddies Jay and Bill, the RPG After Years.
The after what?
The RPG After Years. Our show has entered into a new era of covering everything RPGs, both old and new. Thus it is after its first era. It's the After Years.
I thought RPG was rocket propelled grenade.
No, RPG stands for role-playing game. It's a genre of video game. Every week we go through the latest news and discuss other relevant RPG-related topics. We also review RPGs as we complete them.
So an RPG is not a rabid Portuguese goose?
No, thank God. From Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy to The Witcher and Cyberpunk, we've got RPGs covered from the dawn of time to the far-flung future.
Oh, I've heard of Final Fantasy.
I'd hope so. So check us out on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening platform happens to be. You can also find us at probablywork.com. Level up your podcast feed with the RPG After Years.
Enjoy the show.
Hey folks, my name is Brett and I'm one of the hosts of Skeleton House, an audio-only Let's Play podcast where my two friends Jess...
What is happening? Oh my god!
...and Steve...
Even he looks spooked.
...play through video games and I edit them, add context, and act as your eyeballs. Also, we have a cat. Come check us out at skeletonhouse.budsprout.com or look up Skeleton House on your favorite podcast app. Or your least favorite podcast app. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life.
Hey, this is Bobby from the Effin' Cultured Podcast. Join me and my friends every week as we talk about all things pop culture and usually end up in crazy conversations like this.
You know how many dick pics a murder hornet can carry at once? A whole satchel.
Like you love hashtag horse girl.
I'm not wearing a mask and these are not fucking pickles!
The big book of Little Richard orgies.
Hey baby, let me be your ghost light.
I ain't gonna leave box 5 empty, if you know what I mean. Hey,
Ford Theater's not the only one where presidents get shot.
Roll them up in a carpet, wrap it in saran wrap, dunk it in chocolate, throw it in a cave, fill it with concrete, and wall lead.
Bang! Button. Easter candy. Done.
Easter candy. That's where Easter
candy. My favorite Easter from. Candy is the host.
Find us on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts and get yourself effing cultured.
Ghostbusters, the video game, is a lot of fun. I'm trying to remember the plot off the top of my head. I mean, it's a lot of dimension hopping.
One of the best things about this one is actually the story. Corey will be thrilled to hear that this one actually pulled a Rogue One and completely explained away a ton of plot holes from the first two movies. So the whole plot revolves around Evo Shandor, the evil architect mentioned in the first movie.
So the plot behind Ghostbusters, the video game, it happens...
In 1991. Just 2 years after Ghostbusters 2.
It's Thanksgiving of 91. We have all of our main returning Ghostbusters, Venkman, Stans, Spengler, and Zedmore. And you, as the player, you are the rookie. We also do have Annie Potts reprising her role as Janine, the receptionist for the Ghostbusters, and good old dickless Walter Peck.
Yeah, lots of scripted kind of, not scripted events in like Last of Us, but close to that where they do in-game animations with the characters. You know, different characters will have to open doors for you to move you along, and then you're kind of chit-chatting as you're walking through the hallways.
They nailed the opening. It was really good.
Even though Gozer almost brought about the end of the world, they are having a Gozer exhibit at the Museum of the Natural History.
Before we get there, of course, you're initially going to the Sedgwick Hotel, and there's all kinds of other ghosts, because the opening scene, basically this PK blast emanates from the museum, and it sends ghosts wild all through the city. So you go to the Sedgwick Hotel to get Slimer back, and you do, but then like there's all these other ghosts, too, that you have to capture.
Gozer returns in the form of Stay Puft, which you get to light on fire and watch him explode again.
Now, later on, you finally do fight the Stay Puft Marshmallow, and the way they handle this is, you being a rookie... You kind of, I don't remember if you stumble or if they just pull you down, but they're like holding you by your suspenders, and you're like on the side of this building while the Stay Puft Marshmallow is climbing up, and you're fighting him and like shooting down. Of course, they're shouting encouragement and all this other stuff. And Ecto-1's trying to get in position under it, so it has like a trap on the top of it. They're trying to catch the Stay Puft Marshmallow.
And literally, there's a terrible scene. It's not even a scene. It's just like the marshmallow's outside the front gate. It's probably 10 foot tall, not quite as tall as it was in the movie. And it's just jumping up and down outside the front door. And you've just got to time yourself walking into the door when it's jumped in the air. And then that'll be it.
This causes a surge of paranormal activity throughout the entire city. You end up going back to the hotel from the first movie.
Since the story revisits a few locations from the first two movies, it really puts you in the action of the original movies.
And rescuing an anthropologist named Alyssa.
There's a new love interest for Peter, Dr. Alyssa Selwyn.
Played by Alyssa Milano, that is.
The basic overall plot here is actually they center a lot more around Evo Shandor, which is kind of like he's kind of the mastermind behind that set in motion the events of the first movie. But he actually takes a lot more of an active role in this movie, in this one. It's actually Evo Shandor himself you're fighting. Eventually. Spoilers. Yeah, well, if you're listening to this and you're not ready for spoilers, I don't know what to tell you. And, you know, and of course, you don't know this until later.
We encounter a whole backstory and more information about the Gozerian cultist, about how there was far more created than just the tower that Dana used to live in.
Although, like, there's so many callbacks. It's like, you know, like the very beginning, you're going into like this Gozer wing of the museum here, you know, that basically details what happened back then. You know, that was a complaint that, like, Ghostbusters 2 is like, well, did anything happen from the first movie? Like, they don't even reference it.
You also get to go back to New York Library and get the full backstory on the librarian ghost and end up in Ghost World.
One of the coolest sequences was where you actually cross over into Ghost World, which is basically Ghostbusters in hell.
Another thing that I really liked about the game is that they spent time in the Ghost Realm, and that was part of the idea from the third Ghostbusters film. Instead of going to Manhattan, you are now in the Ghost Realm version of Manhattan, and the two realms are kind of crashing together, and you have to stop that from happening. That was a cool aspect, and you get to jump back and forth between New York and the Ghost Realm.
Fighting your way out of that, you end up back in the real world with a book that was revered by the Gozerian cult, finding out about some sort of Nexus Mandela and power positions of the city.
What I remember being like a really tense and interesting encounter was this kind of like a Spider Queen ghost. And this happens in the middle of the game. You go back to the Sedgwick Hotel and you kind of get cut off from the other Ghostbusters. So you're by yourself and you're actually fighting like this really powerful ghost that's like completely kicking over the floor of the hotel. I don't remember beat for beat everything that happened. I just remember that I thought that was just a really cool ghost. At a, you know, really cool event in the game.
There's whole underground facility with paranormal activity happening. There is an undersea island in the Hudson. They also explain where the ooze and slime from Ghostbusters 2 was coming from.
Turns out that Evo had a secret creepy island off the coast of New York that's been pumping ecto slime into the sewers since the 1920s.
But it ties in directly with the whole plot, which turns out that Alyssa is the direct descendant of Ivan Shandor, the crazy architect from the first movie, and all of the Ghostbusters fights to this point have been directed by him for the past 7 years. Gozer, Viggo the Carpathian, all in service to turning Ivo Shandor into a god. Mostly because although he worshipped Gozer with the whole cult thing, he found him weak when losing to the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and then isn't it Ivo Shandor himself is kind of the big bad that you fight in the end?
At the very end, Evo goes full demon god.
The cast do also have some good interactions with one another and dialogue back and forth. One-liners here and there. The listen up, smell that is used a couple times.
I guess the very, like, my favorite line in the game actually comes at the very end. Like I said, it's all the original actors, you know, doing their voices. But you're actually fighting the big boss, Evo Shandor himself, the architect. You're side by side with the other Ghostbusters, and you know they're pulling out the strategy of we gotta cross the streams to beat the thing. So that's what you're all doing. You're all crossing the streams, and you know Evo Shandor is like, "You can't defeat me. I'm a god." And Egon says, "We eat gods for breakfast." And of course, you know, about that point, that's when he blows up and like everybody gets flung back. And Ray looks at Egon and says, "We eat gods for breakfast." And Egon's like, "Too much?" He said, "No, I liked it." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I liked it too. I thought that was funny. Cool." You know, it's not something you expect from Egon either. Yeah.
I think my favorite line is near the end when they're in Central Park and it's kind of been converted into a cemetery. I think it's Winston who says, "This isn't the Central Park I remember." And Egon replies with, "Oh, you still have your wallet?"
I absolutely adore the fact that so much of this game is a love letter to the Ghostbusters franchise, and they go out of their way to try and make it an immersive experience.
As we come in, you know, here onto the home stretch for Afterlife, which is, you know, a sequel to Ghostbusters. I suppose I'll end with this, because they end the entire game with actually a really interesting premise that they never realized. Because they could easily have made a sequel of the game based off of this, but your character, like they don't hire you as a full-time there in New York, but they actually send you off, like at the very end of the game, it's like they basically send you off to a different city unnamed to start like a new franchise of the Ghostbusters. So you'll be like the, you know, you'll go somewhere else and like get your own crew, and you'll be a Ghostbusters, like say in Chicago or wherever. And that's kind of where they end. That's what happens. It ends up to your character at the very end of the movie. And that seemed like a really cool idea for like if they ever wanted to do a sequel to this game.
Since we hadn't yet gotten that third flick, this is about as close as we've gotten until Afterlife showed up. And with most fans of the series embracing this game's story as a true sequel, the question now becomes, will Afterlife make a reference to this game as canon, or will it just ignore it?
It does add a lot to the Ghostbusters lore that is currently being tossed out because a new movie is ignoring all of this.
It only takes one little reference to confirm it. Although that said, I imagine it won't, considering that the plot of this game leans heavily on the legacy of Evo Shandor, which Afterlife seems to be referencing as well.
Now that Afterlife is going to be coming and will be an actual continuation, I doubt that the video game will be still considered a canon in any point.
But maybe they'll throw in one or two Easter eggs. You know, maybe they'll show a half, you know, slime blower attachment sitting somewhere on Egon's workbench or something like that. But I'm not really expecting any of that. I'm expecting it to try and keep things pretty straightforward and clean and not get mired down in too much of the extra continuity that has happened between the different media that have come out supporting Ghostbusters.
Even if it will no longer be viewed as canon, it's still a solid story in my opinion.
But we're going to have to wait and find out once Afterlife drops, which may or may not be before this episode.
Plot is really good. It's a really good and well-made story and movie. But being a video game, they have a lot more options to like really throw in a lot of Easter eggs, which they do a lot of, and also a lot of callbacks.
There's some great Easter eggs in the game as well, from blatant ones like Viggo's painting in the lobby.
And we get Viggo the Carpathian, voiced by Max von Sydow.
For whatever reason, the Ghostbusters now have his painting in their headquarters.
I love that the Viggo painting is just there, and if you click on it enough times, he just says a whole bunch of really stupid stuff.
And if you walk around the fire station, you can go up to the painting of Viggo the Carpathian, and he has all these hilarious sayings.
I thought at the end of Ghostbusters 2, the painting had changed to the four Ghostbusters and Oscar, but we have the actual Viggo painting in the firehouse. So what happened? Why is Viggo still stuck in the painting? I thought we beat him. No, he's in the painting and he actually can interact with you as the character.
An even deeper and much more time-consuming one is finding a message on the answering machine that sounds a lot like a completely unrelated character from an entirely different franchise stating that Viggo's painting, quote, belongs in a museum. I wonder who that could be. Two less obvious ones, like the misspelled message from the end of the original NES game that can be found on Egon's PC.
There's a lot of fun Easter eggs throughout the game, like different random bonus items you come across, a haunted beard, and a pair of cursed hippie pants from Woodstock.
I loved the firehouse. That might have been my favorite thing about the whole thing. I like that you have the video games and stuff upstairs and the toaster, and I like how much care they took in making it and giving it a bunch of Easter eggs for the other films.
I guess it could be argued as a fault, but there's a lot of rehashing from the movies, but that's great if you wanted to be in those movies without actually doing the exact movie again.
Slimer makes his return because, well, you can't have Ghostbusters without Slimer.
You know, I like that you just kind of have Slimer in a cage there.
So you get to go to the Sedgwick Hotel, and you go to the library, you fight a version of the Stay Puft, you encounter the Gray Lady from the library.
Now, eventually, that moves on to a sequence with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Of course, you have to bring him back. He's awesome.
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man comes back as a form of Gozer the Destructor.
The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is the greatest thing ever, so you have to bring him back. And they bring him back really well. It didn't feel forced. They don't have to cross the streams or anything to fight him. Speaking of cross the streams, they keep telling you not to do it. I don't know that you can do it. Maybe you can. Maybe I'd have to go and like try to force it somehow.
We do get an appearance by Peck, aka Dickless.
He is now heading up the Paranormal Contracts Oversight Commission.
Now, I know, like, Walter Peck, he does make a reappearance. Matter of fact, he kind of makes an appearance as the new mayor puts him in charge of the Ghostbusters a little bit. Part of the...
And he's essentially the Ghostbusters boss for a little while.
The story is, or the plot is, the Ghostbusters are actually now a city service. So the city actually pays them, and also the city has, like, insurance, like, you know, cover damages and whatever. So, like, you automatically get paid based on, you know, ghost you capture. But he's also actually a lot more central to the plot. He does get possessed by Evo Shandor at some point.
And the new mayor is the CEO from Christmas Vacation. Put him right over the other ghost, Greaseball. Who apparently is also Bill Murray's brother, which I didn't realize.
Oh, also Brian Doyle Murray, Bill Murray's older brother. He plays the new mayor, Jock Mulligan. Is that his name? Whatever. He's also the same guy who played the psychiatric doctor in Ghostbusters 2 and the boss in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Most, if not all, of the music is pulled from Elmer Bernstein's original score, which makes the experience feel much more genuine.
Thankfully, there's no dream ghosts giving Dan Aykroyd a beeger in the middle of the night. That's entirely unnecessary.
I absolutely love this moment from this game. As I mentioned, when you're doing the PKE meeting, you're kind of just sweeping around, you're trying to find something, and sometimes like you'll kind of run into a wall. It's like, well, where's the item? And you have to, like, go around something to find out from a different angle. And there's one element in here where for all the world it looked like you go into this room and there's like a vase, and you're looking at this vase and you go around to the other side of it. It's like, I can't find anything. I look down on the ground, I can't find anything. I look up and like, oh shoot, a bunch of ghosts come through a skylight. It's like it's a jump scare, but it made me laugh so hard because it's just something that you could just easily see from a movie. I love that scene.
One of the drawbacks to this one is that I think the boss fights kind of overstay their welcome just a little.
And you get a mini boss every 30 minutes or so.
Some of the boss fights are terrible.
usually some big monster made out of stuff around, or I don't know, one of the fat, like, crazy ghosts from the first movie.
It's just a little repetitive at times and makes the pace of the plot crawl to a stop.
At times, I did find it a little buggy because if the ghost you were attempting to capture or maneuver went behind something, even the smallest thing, it could break the stream and then you'd have to start all over again.
One major drawback, though, is I think this game was kind of ahead of its time, and I think if it had been made a few years later, they could have probably leaned more into the story elements of the game, which are kind of the big draw for me. Instead, the story is more secondary, which is kind of unfortunate. I mean, can you imagine a Ghostbusters game from the people who did The Last of Us?
There's also a ton of cutscenes. If you go around a corner, it might cut to a pre-rendered scene for about 1 second, and then you go right back into the game again, just thrust into, like, a situation.
And they just did a remaster. I've not played the remaster of the game. The version I'm playing is actually the original 2009 version. But if they ever, you know, with a remaster, maybe they'll, like, you know, say, hey, maybe we should do this. And there is the potential for a really cool sequel that follows up on the same kind of gameplay, just all new ghosts, all new scenes. They could be as creative as they want because now they've done the work. Like, this is the problem with 2016's Ghostbusters. They threw away what came before. Whereas if they did it this way, they didn't throw it away. It's just that was the prequel to what you are now. Now you can do all adventures, have all new characters, all new cast.
I'll say I had a hell of a time getting the remastered game to play.
Now, as a gamer, calling a re-release of an older game a remaster feels like something that's become more commonplace, even though I don't feel like the term is used as accurately as they'd like you to think. Okay, so the developers increased the image resolution and frame rate for the gameplay.
However, the developer had a lot of bugs they never truly fixed going through old forums trying to fix my particular issues. So the game tended to crash on the PC for, like, no reason. And on my particular install, it didn't save levels or achievements, apparently a common bug left over from the old game.
Whoop-dee. Cutscenes still look dated as hell, and character models do too. It just feels like a rush job to make a buck. I've seen hobbyists create more detailed versions of older games in their spare time on Unreal Engine 4.
And I was very upset because it was supposed to have multiplayer, and I guess they never actually turned that on. Like, to have a Ghostbusters multiplayer game that functions like... it's the thing everyone wants, man. Because I would have played the hell out of that game if I could actually go and bust ghosts with my friends, especially my friends that are in my freaking Ghostbuster franchise. That would have been a blast.
Hey there! there, siblings. I'm Stephen White.
And I'm Lacia Finley.
The host of Super Mega Crash Brothers Turbo.
Ugh, it's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
It gets easier the more you say it.
Each week, we discuss all the big headlines in gaming.
We also do game reviews, developer interviews, and retrospectives on the industry.
All of this while going on multiple tangents about whatever strikes us in the moment.
Hey, listen, did you happen to watch that TV show I recommended to you?
Stephen, focus.
Oh, right. Follow Super Mega Crash Brothers Turbo on Twitter and Instagram.
And find Super Mega Crash Brothers Turbo wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Are you a fan of high fantasy epic book series that are converted into television series? No, not that one. I mean an epic book series that is actually complete. I'm referring to The Wheel of Time, Robert Jordan's fantasy masterpiece that was completed posthumously by Brandon Sanderson. Well, I have the perfect podcast for you. The Tavirenn is a Wheel of Time podcast where three gentlemen go through the series one chapter at a time. In their own special way. Follow along as Bill, Rob, and Rich re-experience this great epic. Experience for yourself a world full of vibrant locations, colorful characters, and storylines that will never fail to surprise. Visit a world that Game of Thrones can only wish was as fleshed out and complete. The Tavirenn, a Wheel of Time podcast, is part of the We Can Make This Work Probably network of podcasts. Find our podcast wherever you get your podcast feed, or visit probablywork.com for episodes of this podcast and other great shows. We will see you at the Winespring Inn.
Joining me is Eric Slater. My name is Chris Carroll, and this is Comic Zombie.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
The law! I'm the Juggernaut!
So, Batman kills a lot of people in this movie.
Dude, he kills so many people in this movie.
They had the Hal Jordan Green Lantern, yeah. But one of the alternates was the John Stewart Green Lantern.
Yep.
And they even did the animated voice.
Yep, for Lamar.
Back when Stan was writing those books, they were 15 pages or 17 pages, and you get it done in one issue and you're out the door.
Yeah.
Bendis took 6 issues to tell Amazing Fantasy 15.
I'm just laughing as I'm saying it because it sounds stupid.
Wasn't he designed by Jim Lee? And I love me some Walking Dead.
I just feel bad for the poor bastard that has to ring that bell. It stares, bro.
And I'm certain I'm not going to be surprising anybody with this one because I think this is universally recognized as the worst superhero game, much less comic book game, much less maybe even video game. Superman 64.
Days of Future Past in the comic, everyone you know is dead.
It's pretty dark right out the gate.
Alfred may be a good butler, but he is the worst secret keeper of all time.
We're going to be talking about a lot of different stuff, ranging from comics to movies to TV shows, all kinds of stuff that we like, that we don't like. Probably be a little bit more vocal about the stuff that we don't like. I'm looking right at you, Halle Berry's Catwoman. Anyway, comiczombie.net. Check it out, and I hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Comic Zombie.
Another interesting aspect about this one is that you can tell where the 2016 movie actually lifted some of the plot elements from the unused Ghostbusters 3 script, especially with the villain's plot dealing with ley lines and merging the ghost realm with ours. Apparently, there was even a parade scene with haunted floats, which was basically the climax of Answer the Call, but was cut from the game.
If you wanted to see what it would have been like if they had a movie come out in the mid-90s for Ghostbusters, this would be it.
It's the third movie that we never really got, but now with Afterlife upon us, we finally are getting the third movie, and how this is going to exist in the universe, we don't know. And from what I've been told, they want to create a universe similar to the MCU, where it's a franchise, and there are more groups.
Honestly, I really do think this might be the best Ghostbusters sequel to date. It blew 2 and 16 out of the water for me, so I'm really excited to see if Afterlife can top it. So the further I got into the game, the more I actually liked it.
Overall, it's definitely a fun time if you love the franchise.
But yeah, if you have not played this game, and you like Ghostbusters, the movie, and you want to know what it's like to be a Ghostbuster, do it. It's fun. It's a really fun game. Totally worth your time. Go and get this game.
Casual fans could have fun too. but certain story elements could leave them a little bit lost.
If you're curious about this game, but you're not like super into gaming or you don't have a high frustration threshold, but you do want to kind of get a little Ghostbuster content in your veins, give this game a go on easy and then just kind of cruise through the ghost parts and see the fun stuff.
Overall, this is a great game from what I played. Again, I only got about a third of the way through it before having to submit for this episode.
So if you can get yourself a cheap copy of the game and get it to work, it might be fun for you to play. It's decent. It's not the best game in the world.
Oh, it was terrible. Looking back, it's just like, I can't believe I played this shit.
Warning, playing this game will make you hungry for Doritos due to the massive amount of in-game promotion for Doritos. But anyways, shout out to the good people at Doritos for bringing us Ghostbusters 3. Your contributions to culture are very much appreciated.
That's the end of the game. You go to the top of the lift, you can see the two dog things and the portal, the men zap it, and then it says, well done, you've saved the city, here's $5,000. You've actually made or lost money, here's a code to use for your next game to carry your money over.
Congratulations, you have completed a great game and proved the justice of our culture. Now go and rest our heroes.
But as a kid, I f***ing lapped it up. Absolutely amazing.
If you do happen to purchase it, to paraphrase Tyler from a couple of our past episodes of Podcasters Assemble, busting will make you feel good. Well, now that I've said that out loud, that just sounds awful.
I believe the next stop here is we still got to do the Ghostbusters animated series, which is, everybody's been talking about it. We're going to get to it eventually.
The Ghostcasters will return in The Real Ghostbusters.
That is my jam. That is what got me into Ghostbusters. I have so many fond memories, so many toys. I will save those for the next episode.
And then we got the movie itself, which I hope I can get to see before we need to do a review. I'll try. If you don't hear from me, then you know I didn't get to see it. But
and we'll be reviewing Ghostbusters Afterlife in just a couple weeks.
What are you doing here in Somerville anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke. And the only thing that's left in our name is this creepy old farmhouse our grandfather left us in the middle of nowhere.
Why'd you bring me up here? Entertainment value.
What is that?
I don't know.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
Under the dining table, now!
Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
I found this in my living room.
Whoa, killer replica.
A replica of what?
A ghost trap? There hasn't been a ghost sighting in 30 years. New York in the 80s? It's like The Walking Dead. Your dad never mentioned this to you?
It's just my mom. My grandfather died. My mom says we're just here to pick through the rubble of his life.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Call it luck. Call it karma. I believe that everything happens for a reason.
Come on, darling.
It has a gunner seat?
until we roll into the next quest, be safe. Bye-bye.
So until then, podcasters, assemble. Ghostbusters!
Podcasters Assemble is a production of the We Can Make This Work, Probably, Podcast Network. Find more of our shows at probablywork.com and learn how to contribute to future episodes of Podcasters Assemble by looking us up on Twitter and Instagram at Casters Assemble or joining our Discord page. Link in the show notes. Submissions are always open. Intro written by Justin Aki. Music by Deft Stroke Sound. Voiceover by a guy in a basement with three daughters who's just glad he's not on food stamps. This episode was edited by Corey Torgerson. Thank you to everyone who was able to contribute to this episode. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to where you can find them all online. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
That's it. That's it. I hope you're able to cut up some usable bits from this long, rambly discussion of a very, very fun video game.
Oh, what else do I want to talk about? And there's so much I want to talk about, but...
I think the one confusing thing, and I guess it's not really the confusing thing, it's just who the character is. Walter Peck, he's there to be the side antagonist against the Ghostbusters and as their boss and trying to consistently shut them down. I don't understand why, because he still goes with the mantra that ghosts are fake and that the Ghostbusters are frauds, but he witnessed ghosts in the first film. He witnessed the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. He got tons of marshmallow dumped on him. At one point during this game, he gets possessed, but still claims that ghosts aren't real and the Ghostbusters are frauds. I understand him needing to be a complete a-hole and be the side antagonist, but I don't know how you can have his character still sit here and go, no, they don't exist, unless it's supposed to be that he's in denial and he's just supposed to be an a-hole. Is that the idea? Is it? I guess. I mean, there are people out there that no matter what proof you show them of something, they will deny it.
Assuming anything I say is of any use, this will be my first time on Podcasters Assemble. This season, Ghostbusters, the Ghostbusters franchise is what's being talked about. There's somebody here in the background where I'm recording, so there's some doors opening and banging around.
Hi, my name's Bill from Bill's JRPG Trappings and Other Adventures. Call me by my fucking podcast run.
We also have the return of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And we actually do have Vigo the Carpath.
I'm describing video games. There's zero reason for me to describe what a video game is.
Vigo the Carpath. Buckets. Fuck! I don't know what I'm doing.
Shout out to the Doritos Corporation. Are they the corporation? Is it Nabisco? Did do my research here.